Okay, so tonight we are back with our series of minor characters in a major story, and we're going to be talking about Elishama ben Amihud. Elishama ben Amihud is one of the 12 people mentioned at the beginning of the parasha that are princes, chieftains, the Nesi'im of Bnei Israel, of 12 of the Shvatim. Of course, when I say 12 of the Shvatim, I'm discounting Levi. We always, the Ramban says, you always have to have 12 Shvatim. So sometimes Levi is counted, and then Menashe and Ephraim are combined together into being Shevet Yosef. And sometimes Levi is not counted, like in this week's parasha, when Levi is counted separately, and then Menashe and Ephraim get split up. So to make sure that we have 12. But why we have to have 12 is obviously a much different discussion. Each one of the Nesi'im has their own backstory, some of them more famous than the other. Who's the most famous Nasi? What do you think?
Nachshon ben Aminadav.
Yeah, I think so also. Thank you, Hematology Israel. Nachshon ben Aminadav is definitely the most famous of the Nesi'im. Shevet Yehuda. We've discussed the Aminadav family when we talked about Aaron's wife and Kalev, I guess, and Chur, when we talked about Chur. But we're talking about somebody who's a little bit less famous, Elishama ben Amihud. And tonight's shiur is actually going to be a little bit of a combination of this week and next week, because the Nesi'im basically get screen time in this week's parasha and in next week's parasha. In this week's parasha, they're just mentioned at the very beginning as the Nesi'im of the Shvatim. But in next week's parasha, they get a much more front and center. Why is that? What's next week's parasha? Exactly. Parasha Naso, which is, of course, the longest parasha in the whole Torah, mostly because half the parasha is taken up with the inauguration of the Mishkan and the Korbanot that the Nesi'im bring, which, of course, is also important halachically because we don't say Tachanun in Chodesh Nisan b'zchut the Nesi'im's Korbanot. Because of the 12 days at the beginning of Nisan that were taken up with the inauguration of the Mishkan through their Korbanot, that's essentially the reason why we don't say Tachanun in Nisan. So we get Elishama ben Amihud twice, in this week's parasha and in next week's parasha. And our discussion is going to really be from both of those places. The truth is that most of the Midrashim center on his mention in next week's parasha, but nevertheless, he's mentioned for the first time here. Now, who is the Nasi of? So the Torah says, "Livnei Yosef leEfrayim Elishama ben Yehud leMenashe Gamliel ben Pedatzur." I don't know. To me, I know that it's right here, but Gamliel always sounds like a post-biblical name because we have a bunch of Gamliels in the Second Temple, right? We have Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel. It always struck me as being a post-biblical name, but here you go. It's right here. Menashe, Sheva Menashe has Gamliel ben Pedatzur. But we're more focused on Elishama ben Amihud. Now, what we're going to do tonight is both examine his backstory, his history, and then we'll talk a little bit of homiletics, a little bit of what we can learn from his mention in the parasha, both here and in Parashat Naso. Anybody have anything that you want to share about Elishama ben Amihud before we start? Any good memories? Any special anecdotes about Elishama ben Amihud? Is he sufficiently minor enough? Okay, good, good. I don't want to take a major character here. So, number one, the truth is that Elishama ben Amihud has good legacy. The Ibn Ezra says, back in Sefer Parashat Beshalach, actually, Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua. So Ibn Ezra says, Yehoshua hunin hanasi Elishama ben Amihud. Now, somebody's going to have to help me out over here, because it says here that he's a nin. Now, a nin is a great-grandson, correct? Yeah, which means he's a great grandson of Elishama ben Amihud. Shehaya baal degel Ephraim. Ukrao katuv kan Yehoshua b'shem shekrao Moshe b'davar ha'meraglim. Okay, that's a Yehoshua topic. Why is he called Yehoshua instead of Hoshea? Fine. So Yehoshua ben Nun is supposed to be the nin of Elishama ben Amihud. Now, how do we work that out? So in this Sefer Divrei HaYamim, it gives you a list of all the children of Ephraim. Actually, there's a tragic backstory to the children of Ephraim. They were all killed, basically. Ephraim had I didn't count, it was about 8 sons that were all killed. And then he had a further several sons. He had a lot of children. So Ephraim had a bunch of children, and then here's what interests us. La'adan b'no Amihud b'no Elisha, sorry, La'adan b'no Amihud b'no Elishama b'no Nun b'no Yehoshua b'no. Now, there is some discussion in the Rishonim about how to read these psukim. Is this giving you a list like this person is this person's son and this person is this person's son and this person is this person's son? Or is it telling you that La'adan is the son of one person and Amihud is the son of the same person, Elishama is the son of the same person, and you're none? What exactly is going on over here? Now the Malbim goes and he says, Yesh lefarisha ba'a sheba pasuk zeh hem banav shel Bria. Bria is the actual son of Ephraim who survived. Okay, he had a son that survived, and all of these children are from Bria. L'chein nichtav vav b'kol echad. U'la'adan haya b'no shel Tachan, v'amihud b'no shel La'adan. Al-kopanim yadanu yichuso shel Yehoshua b'nun. This is how we find out where Yehoshua b'nun come from. Shenun haya ben shel Elishama ben Amihud, nisi livnei Ephraim. So what does that make? What does that make Yehoshua in relation to Elishama ben Amihud? As far as I can tell.
A grandson.
He's a grandson. Right, as far as I can tell. Okay, and according to the pasuk as well, it's very, you can't be a great grandson. Elishama beno, Nun beno, Yehoshua beno. Nun is the son of Elishama, and Yehoshua is the son of Nun. So I have to conclude that the word Nin in the Ibn Ezra must mean grandson. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. Now it doesn't.
The word Nin is a generic term meaning descendant.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think it means descendant. Over here, it would mean neched. It has to be, because otherwise there's something wrong, and it's too easy of a mistake for the Ibn Ezra to make. So it must be that during the time of Ibn Ezra, you could use the word nin, even when you meant a grandson. Nowadays, you can't. The Emes Liakov of Yaakov Kamenetsky as well, he points out this connection, and he has one extra thing to mention. He says, "Ubiyot Yehoshua," we know how old Yehoshua was during the time of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. B'yot Yehoshua b'zman Yitzhak Mitzrayim k'ben mem bet shana. He was 42 years old. V'im kein hu sha'aya d'kno, that means his grandfather, Elishama ben Amihud, the Nasi of Shevet Menash, of Shevet Ephraim, must have been older than 60. If Yehoshua is 42, right? So it's a good bet that Elishama ben Amihud was older than 60. There is a way to keep him under 60. Right? He basically could be as young as 56, right? If he had a child when he was 7, and then that child had a child when he was 7, which, whatever. So, im ken hayu anesiim yoter mishishim shana v'av shayu yotei tzava. But assuming that he was older than 60, that means that the nesiim, that it was possible for the nesiim to be older than 60. And even though they were yotei tzava. Now, what's interesting about this? It means that there were people who were going to war who were older than 60. Anybody still on my Shtiklach WhatsApp group? I sent one out 2 hours ago where the Abravanel points out that in the parasha, when they're taking the census, the lower bound of 20 years old is mentioned, but the upper bound of 60 years old, which is what we're used to, is not mentioned. And he wonders why. And he answers because 60 is not really that a cutoff point for going to war. You have 60-year-olds who are just as good as young 20-year-olds in war. Now, I mean, I don't know if he means in Kravi or if he means they were in Modi'in. They were maybe in Shmona Matayim. Maybe they were generals. I don't know. But his point is that apparently there was no hard cutoff point of 60. You could still be in Miluim even after 60 in that army. And this jives well with what the Emes Liakov is pointing out over here, that Elishama ben Amihud appears to be older than 60. Okay. Now, a little bit of homiletics in terms of the name of Elishama ben Amihud. The Or HaChaim quotes the Midrash over here. We have the Midrash as well. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehoshua ben Karcha are quoted in the Tanchuma on our verses saying that the name Elishama suggests that whereas Yehoshua listened to the commands of God, he was Shama. He did not listen to the command of his mistress to sleep with her. He did not make common cause with the wicked. Joseph did not desist from sinning because he was not tempted, but because he was obedient to God's imperatives. In other words, Yehoshua listened to Hashem. Not, it's not that he didn't want to sleep with Eshet Potiphar. He indeed did. He really wanted to. But because he listened to Hashem instead of listening to his own inclinations, so he was rewarded that his descendant would be called Elishama. He listened to Hashem, which is nice. Means that basically his descendants decided to name a child after Yosef in the spirit of Yosef as being Elishama. And the Amihud is the fact that Yosef aligned himself with God. Imi hodo, right? I his hod is with me. Okay. The Midrash Haggadah is the basis for this, and I bolded this because we can come back to it later. Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu Eli Shama Yosef Shetzivitiv Al Haznut Velo Shama El Adonato, and he didn't listen to his master. In this case, Eshet Potiphar. We're going to get back to this because there's going to be a midrash that appears to contradict this. We'll see. Last thing over here is the Paneach Raza, Rishon, who says, Igdim Ephraim leMenasheh. Why is it that Ephraim over here comes before Menasheh? Levnei Yosef leEphraim leShamana b'Amihud, the Menasheh Gamliel ben Pedatzur. Which one was older? You can guess, but also you can think of the song. Yesh lo shnei banim, Menashe ve'Ephraim. I know that's the one that the kids sing. Right, that was the song that Sarach bat Asher supposedly sang to Yaakov. Yesh lo shnei banim, Menashe ve'Ephraim. Menashe is the older one. When Menashe and Ephraim and Yaakov, of course, sikelet yadav, he switched the hands. So this is what this is talking about. So the Paneach Raza says, Hikdim Ephraim the Menashe l'kayem ashenemar v'yasem et Ephraim lifnei Menashe. He put Ephraim before Menashe. Aval b'chalukat ha'aretz, later on when the land gets split up, there ikdim l'menashe because his chatzi shevet got their spot before they even came into Eretz Yisrael. So chronologically, it made sense. But he adds on, what about Elishama? So Elishama, Hashem Arono shel Yosef, she'ino sino to etel Aron ha'edut, shezeu ben Amihud. I don't totally understand what he's saying over here, but he's saying that he was called Elishama because the Aron Shel Yosef was being carried through the desert by this Shevet, right? I don't know how this connects to the name. If somebody could help me, I don't know. Maybe there's a gematria here that I'm just not catching. I guess it's possible. Somebody could quickly do the gematria. That would be great. Of Elishama and Aron Shel Yosef. Can anybody do it quickly? That's 30, 40, 340, 380, 450, I think. And then this is...
They got the Aleph.
Right, 451. They both have an Aleph. 450, so this is 206, 256, 262. No, it's already... Wait, yeah, 562. We're already out of here. There's... Yeah, there's a resh and a shin, so we're out of the game right away.
Feels like it might be a Rashi Tevot in a weird way.
Arono
Shel Yosef.
Arono Shel Yosef. Arono Shel Yosef.
Something from Eidut. The Ayin would be the Eidut.
Arono Le Yosef, maybe?
It's Arono Eidut. I don't know. I don't know. Okay.
It would seem to me if there's no Rashi Tevot, this Paneach Raza would explain what they are.
Yeah.
And assuming understand it.
Yeah. Not sure. Anyways, well, they were carrying the bones of Yosef. And he says, Shazo ben Amihud, Klamar, Ami Hodo, Shahodo Shal Shemit Barach, Shuarono, Holechet Imo, Imi Hodo, sorry. His hod is walking with me. V'zeo Eli Shama Sheshama Eli V'sivai Mi Hodo. Okay. Anyways, the Paneach Raza makes the same point. What interested me was this part, the Hektim Ephraim and the Menasheh, because we're going to get back to that as well. The fact that Ephraim comes before Menasheh over here, it's going to be important. Very important. Okay. Here we get to the second section, where this is from Parshat Naso. When Elishama ben Amihud is mentioned, it says, "Bayom Ashvi Nasi Livnei Ephraim Elishama ben Amihud." So on which day is Elishama ben Amihud bringing his korban? On the seventh day. Now, what does that mean on the seventh day? So, you know, it's the seventh day probably of Nisan. That's almost for sure. But according to the Midrash, it's not only the seventh day of Nisan. The Midrash in Bemidbar Rabbah quotes this pasuk from Tehillim, Li galad v'lim enashev Ephraim ha'oz roshi Yehuda mechokiki. Ephraim is the strength of my head. It says this refers to the prince of Ephraim who brought his offering of the dedication of the altar on Shabbat, on the seventh day of the week. As the verse says, on the seventh day, the prince of the children of Ephraim, we know that it was Shabbat, for we have earlier demonstrated that the princes started to bring their offerings on Sunday. So we can assume that Ephraim brought his korban on Shabbat. Why is this important? Because the Sifri says, this one pushed aside Shabbat and Tumah, although the offering of an individual pushes aside neither. The assumption here is that this korban that he's bringing is not a korban sibur. It's not a korban tamid. It's not a korban Pesach. It's not anything for Yom Tov. This is the korban of Shevet Ephraim. This is a personal korban, and it's being brought on Shabbat. That is usually a big no-no. That's a red flag, okay? So how is he allowed to do that? So it says he was pushed aside for the sake of Ephraim's korban. So as you can imagine, the Mefarshim are going to, what question are they going to ask? Why was Ephraim chosen to push aside Shabbat? Right? It could have been any of the Shvatim. Why was he specifically chosen?
I have another question. Perhaps we can infer from this that the korban of the nasi was not a regular korban yachid. There was something special about this korban, which was sort of perhaps somewhere between a yachid and a tzibur.
Maybe. Yeah. Well, so the Rebbeinu Bachaye gives us one approach. We're going to have two
approaches. Sorry, just before you get there, how was the order chosen? We say they were chosen for Shabbat. How was it, as far as I remember, the Torah doesn't give, it was lottery or?
No, I don't think it was lottery, but for sure, Nachshon ben Aminadav was first. He was the one who gave the first korban on apparently Sunday. And then from then, the truth is, I think, if I remember correctly, your son asked me this question last year on WhatsApp. I think I posted something from the Or HaChaim. I don't think it was this, but maybe it was. Posted something from the Or HaChaim, and he asked me about the order specifically here. You can ask him.
Ask him.
The second day was Yisachar, and the third day was Zvulun. Oh, it looks to me like it's according to the Degalim, because it goes Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, and that's one Degel. And then, yeah, it looks like it. And then Reuven, Shimon, Gad, that's the second Degel. And then Ephraim, Menashe, Binyamin. Yeah, according to the Degalim. That seems to be the order. Nevertheless, why does Yisachar merit going on Shabbos? So Rabbeinu Bachaye says, on the seventh day, the prince of the sons of Ephraim, Elisham, and Amiud. Some commentators believe that the seventh day mentioned here was the seventh in the sequence of these offerings. Just mean the seventh day. Others say that it was the seventh day counting for the first day of creation, which was Shabbat. The Torah wants us to know that although, as a general rule, sacrifices by individuals do not override the Sabbath legislation, in this case it did, this was exceptional. It would not occur again. In other words, it was an exception of some kind. He didn't really answer why. A midrashic approach, based on Tanhuma, on the fact that the tribe of Joseph brought his sacrifice on the seventh day of the week, the God said to Yosef, by your life, you have fulfilled the commandment of not committing adultery with the wife of Potiphar, at a time when I had not yet legislated this commandment in the Torah. Do you guys notice this? This is going against the other Midrash. The other Midrash specifically said, Eli Shama, that you listen to my tzivui. I told you not to do znut, and you listen to me. But this Midrash, and I looked it up, in the original Midrash, it does say this. It's not just Rabbeinu Bachaye fabricating a Midrash. The Midrash that he's quoting in Naso, in Tanchuma, says that it was Asher Lo Tzivitiv, a mitzvah that I did not yet give. So you listen to me, even though I did not give a formal mitzvah of not sleeping with Eshet Potiphar. Why there was no formal mitzvah is a good question. Maybe it was because she was a non-Jew. I don't know. In recognition of your self-sacrifice for the concepts contained in that commandment,
are you saying
I will allow... I will allow your son to override the concept of the Sabbath regulations, not to offer private offerings on that day. When he will offer the inaugural sacrifice on behalf of your tribe, not only this, but there will be another tribe's offering separating between the offering of Ephraim and the offering of Manasseh, his brother tribe. Okay, leave that alone. As far as I can tell, what the Rabbein Bachai seems to be suggesting is that because Yosef had gone above and beyond outside the formal nature of the commandments to fulfill Hashem's will, Hashem basically gives permission to his great-great-great-great-grandson to also go outside the framework of the commandments in order to bring a korban on Shabbat in an antinomian way, right? Against the normal rules. That appears to be what the Rabbeinu Bachai is saying. Does anybody have another read on this Rabbeinu Bachai or express anything about it?
No, just accept that this is the first time I've considered it. I mean, there was no Isur of Lot enough at the time of Yosef.
So it's hard to say that because it's one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, right? Or Gila Arayot in general is one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach. I presume that what Rabbeinu Bachai could be saying is that because Yosef was keeping the mitzvot as a Jew and she was a non-Jew, maybe it's something along those lines. As well as, you know, according to the Midrash, Potiphar was a Saris, he was a eunuch, so how could they be married? It may be something along those lines, but that's what the Midrash says.
I still don't get the connection between his fulfilling the commandment that wasn't yet legislated to overriding Shabbat. It's not like he did a Shabbat mitzvah.
No, it wasn't related to Shabbat. It wasn't related to Shabbat. Rabbeinu Bachai doesn't explain how that could be connected to Shabbat. But as far as I can tell, what he's saying is that because you went above and beyond outside the rules, so I'm going to give your descendants the ability to go outside the rules in a good way, outside the rules of Shabbat. It appears to be what he's saying. So that's one approach. But here's this is really the next approach that I want to give is really the keystone of the shir. And puts together a few things. So the Shem Yishmuel. Shem Yishmuel is the son of the Sukkot Shavar Rav, the Avnei Nezer. And he writes as follows. His name is Rav Borenstein. I think his father was Avram, so I forget what his name is. It was the Shem Yishmuel. Let's see.
Shmuel, no?
Yeah, that makes sense. It's Shmuel Borenstein. Yeah, there you go. His father of Avram. So he says, the Midrash Mashma, Daha Shakorba Nasi Yom Ashvi Dochet Shabbat, Humishum Sheikdim Yaakov Avinu Alav Shalom. That's what this stands for, if you guys were wondering. Yaakov Avinu Alav Shalom et Ephraim Lifnei Menashe. Ve'ilu Aya Menashe Kodem Ephraim Uva Yomo La'akrib Shabbat, Lo Aya Dochet Shabbat. Now, so let's start, go step by step. The Shem Yishmuel is saying that according to the Midrash, the reason that Ephraim is given the ability to be Docha Shabbat over here is b'schut the fact that Yaakov put Ephraim before Menashe. Now, where's the Midrash that says this? Where's the Midrash that connects the fact that Yaakov put Ephraim before Menashe, connects it to this? So there's no explicit Midrash that says this. However, the Midrash that we did read, which starts with Ephraim is the strength of my head, this one over here, this is a basuk that appears to be connected to the fact that Yaakov put Ephraim before Menashe by saying Ephraim ma'oz roshi. Okay? That's the way that I heard it explained. So that seems to be his connection. So what's he saying? He's saying that the fact that Yaakov put Ephraim before Menashe, that is why Elishama ben Amihud goes on Shabbat. Ve'esh lavin lama. Why? Vod, and he says as well, it says in the Sifri that b'kulam shedocha de Shabbat v'etatuma, that all of them would have been docha Shabbat and Tuma, whoever had given it. Ha'im ha'inu be'im ayu matchilin b'shar yamim yu'ya shavua v'yirah l'achad anisim yomo b'shabbat haya docha Shabbat. So on the one hand, there was one midrash that makes it sound like there was something special about Elishama ben Amihud. On the other hand, the Sifri makes it sound like there was nothing special. It would have happened no matter which Shevet did it. And then, on top of that, we have a Midrash that seems to imply that it has something to do with Yaakov's choice to put Ephraim before Menashe. So now, he says, Nireh, he puts down the foundation over here. Shem Menashe, al shem ki nashani Elohim et kol amali. Menashe is called Kinashan Elim et Kolonari. Vihi Hasarat HaKochot HaMeikim Nimshechet Misur Mira. What's the idea of Menashe? The idea of Menashe is to get rid of all of the kochot that come from the tzad hara, from bad, from evil. And you do that by avoiding all evil. Ki kamo sheish mitrachek et atzmo mira, marchikin mimenu lo ato et kochot achitzonim hameikin ha-matridin oto masik shlemuto. When a person runs away from bad, so Hashem helps by removing the bad from that person. You just take a step, and Hashem helps. Shem Ephraim, Hashem, what's Ephraim's name? Ki hifrani elokim beretani, hu haitrachvut gvul ha-kedusha nimshach ma'asei tov. Shem says, he made me fruitful and plentiful in this land. This is a positive way of looking at the world. Okay, this is the expansion of kedusha, which comes from asei tov, right? There's sur meira, v'asei tov. So Menashe is associated with the sur meira, and Ephraim is associated with the asei tov. Val korchach, haita dat Yosef, lakdim Menashe l'Ephraim, Hashem seder ha-katuv, sur meira v'achakach v'asei tov. Yosef named his children in order. He named Menashe al shem sur meira, and Ephraim al shem asei tov. And that was the avoda of Yosef himself. Shezachal malto aidei sur meira. How did Yosef become so great? What was the most important moment of his life? When he withstood the temptation of Eshet Potiphar. That was a moment of sur meira. What? That's the computer. Yeah. Okay. Ach Yaakov avinu alav shalom sam et Ephraim lifnei Menashe. But Yaakov put Ephraim before Menashe. Now, what did he do? Hainu shemachmat itrachvut gul haktusha mimele nitbadlu kol kochot achitonim. Yaakov believed that the proper way to get rid of the kochot achitonim was actually the opposite, was to embolden and increase the asei tov. Ke hamas dunag mipnei ha'esh. Hames dunag, I don't know what dunag is. I think this means like the melting of...
Dunag is wax.
Wax, like the melting of wax in front of fire. So the fire here is the asei tov, and the melting is getting rid of the wax. V'zoi avoda yoter gvoha. And this is a greater avoda. V'zot eitza hayutza l'ishe Yisrael, shebal yom tin ba'asiyat ha-torah v'ha-mitzvot, ad shivayer hara mikirbo. And this is the suggestion that we give to Yisrael. Don't wait for the fire of the asei tov to go away. Grab onto it and act right away. Ki mi yachol lomar zachit, sorry. V'rak reishit davar li'itameitz b'lim b'torah kedosha v'asiyat mitzvotav. Just jump into the mitzvot, and by doing that, you will actually burn out the kochot hara from your body. Now, this is a classic approach of which movement in Judaism? The Hasidic approach, right? This is a textbook Hasidic approach of focusing on the asei tov, and then the sur meira will simply come from that. Okay? B'limud Torah Kedusha v'asiyat mitzvotea luma, sorry, I missed the line. Here we go. U'kinyan Shabbat dekfiya v'kaima shebala adam kedushat Shabbat af bo'odo b'lti muchan. And here he has a very nice idea. He says, let's think about Shabbat for a second, okay? And this will get us to the point. Shabbat is every 7 days. Kavua v'kayam. Chok v'leyavor, it doesn't change. Kimi yuchal, by the way, over the course of this, I'm going to show how his chasidut is going to bite him, is going to come back to bite him, as you're going to see. Kimi achol omar zachiti libi shiye ra'ui, I'm sorry, I skipped a line. Okay, here we go. Shabbat is kviya v'kaima, and it will come regardless of whether or not you're ready for it. The im lo aya ba Shabbat rak achar tarat alef sheye ra'ui lekabel kedushat Shabbat lo aya na'aseh Shabbat olam. Because if Shabbat would only come when I was ready for it, when I've prepared my heart for it, then we would never have a Shabbat, right? If Shabbat waited for everybody to say, okay, we're ready, then it would never come. Ki mi yachol lomar zachiti libi sheye ra'ui lekabel kedushat Shabbat shumein olam haba. Rather, what happens is that Shabbat reveals itself, and we become ra'ui for Shabbat once it comes upon us. Vafilu Ama Aret Eimat Shabbat Alav. And even Ama Aret, who obviously is not prepared for Shabbat, the fear of Shabbat, the inspiration of it, comes upon him Baal Korchach, whether he's ready or not. Same thing for Pesach and Shavuot Ba'aleinu L'tova. We couldn't really prepare ourselves for Torah. Even waiting 49 days doesn't prepare us. The Zuama was forced out of us on Pesach. And then we had Yimei Sfira. Uke'ein Shabbat Kanal. And he says, this is why Pesach is called a Shabbat, by the way, because we were not really ready for it. But it came upon us. Now he gets back to it. What did Yaakov do? He placed Ephraim before Menasheh, communicating to Yosef that the Aseh Tov is more important than the Sur Meira. To run after doing mitzvot is a way of getting rid of the Sur Meira. L'hatchil Aseh Tov mikodem kein kedushat Shabbat. Al korchach doche Shabbat. Because Ephraim represents running to mitzvot even before you've prepared yourself to jump into them, therefore he is zoche to be even doche Shabbat. Because Yosef focuses on the Sur Meira, to prepare yourself to run away from Averot, and only then, after you've successfully eradicated all of the Ra from your being, only then to involve yourself in mitzvot, well, we would never get to Shabbat. We would never actually accept upon ourselves Shabbat, because we would never actually reach that level. So, because of that, Ephraim represents the ability to jump into mitzvot in that way, and the Aseh Tov overriding even all of the ra inside of a person. And this is where Elishama ben Amihud's power comes from. The last paragraph just points out that once Yaakov taught Yosef this principle, any one of the Shvatim could really have brought their Korban on Shabbat. Because the point was that Yaakov taught this principle. So it wasn't so much that Elishama ben Amihud was special. It was just that it signifies this lesson. And the placement, by the way, of Ephraim before Menasheh in the giving of these inaugural Korbanot, despite the fact that, as Michael pointed out, the order really stems from somewhere else. It stems from the fact that Ephraim was the Rosh of Degel, right? Degel Ephraim was the head of that Degel. Shevet Ephraim was the head of that Degel. Nevertheless, the fact that Ephraim goes before Menasheh, and that specifically places him on Shabbat, you see, the misplacement of Ephraim and Menasheh is what puts him on Shabbat. That's what that's what aligns it with the story of Yaakov putting Menasheh after Ephraim. Now, I just say that it comes back to bite his chassidus because, right, what do the chassidim do in the morning before they come to shul?
Mikvah.
Well, mikvah, they have a cup of coffee, they have a piece of cake. And if you ask them, even if it means that they actually extend themselves beyond Zman Kriyat Shema or Zman Tefillah, what's the answer that they give? Because they're preparing themselves, because they want to go into Tefillah prepared. They want to make sure that they're ready. So I think that based on the Shem Yishmuel, this is the wrong attitude. You have to jump into the Aseh Tov. There's no such thing as being ready. Start Tefillah. And you get ready during the tefillah. Don't say, I've got to prepare myself, and only then I will daven. No. If we only prepared, and only then did the mitzvot, we wouldn't keep Shabbat. We wouldn't daven. You have to just jump in. Put the Aseh Tov before the Sur Meira. No?
Yeah,
that's right. Tov. Okay. So we saw tonight was Elishama ben Amihud, which I would wager most people didn't know much about before we started this year. Now we know that number one, he was the grandfather of Yehoshua ben Nun, which makes Ephraim. Yehoshua is from Shevet Ephraim. And we know that he was probably around 60 or above. And his name, Eli Shama, is from the fact that Yosef listened to Hashem, either to a mitzvah that was already existent or from a mitzvah that wasn't existent. And we know that Eli Shama ben Amiyoda, next week's parasha, brings a korban on the seventh day, which, according to the Midrash, is actually Shabbat. And we give two answers for why. Rabbeinu Bachaye says, because he actually goes above and beyond in not sleeping with Eshet Potiphar. So Hashem goes above and beyond by letting him bring the korban on Shabbat. Or, according to the Shem Yishmuel, because Ephraim was placed before Menashe during the brachot of Yaakov, when he split his when he switched his hands, that represented the reversal of Aseh Tov and Sor Meira, which Yosef believed it should be Sor Meira v'Aseh Tov, but Yaakov believed it should be Aseh Tov and Sor Meira, and so that for that reason. Elishama ben Amihud gets to bring his korban on Shabbat in an act of Aseh Tov that overrides Sor Meira. All right?
Good.
Good luck, everybody. Have a good night and Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much.
Shabbat Shalom.